Matters, the arts, the Art Scene Radio Talk Show.
All right, welcome to episode 8 of the Art Scene Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, Radman.
This is Halifax. This is Intense.
And today's date is Sunday, October 31st, 2004. For those of you who celebrate Hallow's Eve or similar festivity, happy Halloween. What you were just listening to was the winning song from the Pilgrimage 2004 music competition, Siesta Fiesta by Mr. Moses. In lieu of Spin Sane today, we have Halifax and Intense, and then later in the show, Scour, filling in for this irregularly released episode. Thank you very much, both of you guys, for filling in today and co-hosting.
Oh, no problem, man. Cheers.
This episode will be discussing several subjects. We'll be talking about the shamelessly promoted Pilgrimage 2004 demo party. We'll be covering current events and new releases within the underground scene, and featuring interviews with Unlock of Vantage, who is the organizer of the Boyensley demo party, and Raver, or Rar, depending on how you pronounce it, the author of the highly acclaimed demo book, Demo Scene, The Art of Real Time. But first, we have emails and corrections. For those who are interested in picking up the book on typewriter art we mentioned in Episode 7, the 1956 book, that is, we managed to locate the Library of Congress catalog card number for that. So if you want to pick that up and try and find that on some vintage book site or something like that, or a library near you, the LCCN for that is 56-13336.
Is that the book that I saw over at your house?
Yeah, it was.
All right.
I've been meaning to return that, but it just doesn't want to leave.
The book is amazing.
You got it from the library? Awesome.
Yeah, it is amazing. It has step-by-step instructions on how to create typewriter cartoons.
That was like that guy from your presentation who had made the brick house and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's similar to that on a fundamental level, but the pictures are much more simplistic and cartoony, whereas that guy was just doing...
No, he had something wrong with him anyway, but yeah.
We've also been notified by a few members of a certain group that we've been mispronouncing the name of their art group, Pen 15. Apparently the appropriate pronunciation of the group which we've been referring to as Penis is Pen 15.
That's funny as hell, by the way, though, to hear Spin Sane say penis, because he stretches it out and really, you know, enunciates.
He stretches out, what did you say?
Penis.
What else? In the previous episode, we had a lot of inquiries as to what was being said at the very beginning at the introduction of Art 7. I don't know if you heard it, where there's a bunch of, finish yelling and whatnot before the demo competition started.
Lots of swear words.
Yeah. Basically, there's, at the very beginning of it, there's somebody who's singing a creatively improvised version of a Finnish Christmas carol, Joulu on Tass, and then, you know, there's a bunch of yelling back and forth, turn off your lights. Eventually, we'll be releasing a transcript of Arts Episode 7, which will also include translations, so you can read exactly what was said there. We've also received another supportive email from Zoom of Conspiracy, which basically reads, he just wanted to point out that in addition to some really great 4K demos at Assembly 2004, there were also some superb 64K and full-length demos. If you haven't done so already, definitely check those out. I'd have to agree with that. And then he also writes that he wanted to thank us for the live recording of the Rebirth 4K music at the end of the show. It really brought up massive memories and tears in my eyes. So thanks for that. Keep up the good work. Best regards, Zoom of Conspiracy. So thank you very much. We're going to keep that brief as far as emails go. We have a lot of subjects to cover. So if you'd like to email us, we can be reached at radio@acid.org. Please tell us which country you're writing from and specify how to properly pronounce your name or alias in the event we choose your message for the next arts episode. Okay, we're now going to go to an interview with Unlock Advantage, which was pre-recorded earlier this morning. We're now speaking with Unlock of Vantage. Welcome to the arts.
Hello, this is Unlock, and I'm happy to be on here.
How are you doing?
Fine, you?
Glad to have you here.
Welcome to the show once again. You're affiliated with many different groups. In addition to Vantage, you're also affiliated with Pain Magazine, Padua, Albion, and you're also an organizer of the Boyensley Demo Party. Is there any one group which you most identify with out of all the affiliations that you have?
Yeah, I could say that Vantage is my primary group because it's my own group. I founded it back in August 1997. And as for Pain, it's not really a group, but it's just a staff. staff behind the Disc magazine, and it's one of my most important groups in that sense, because Spain is really big in Europe and the whole scene. It's the most important thing for me, I think. And as for Padua and Albion, these are C64 groups, and Albion is pretty much inactive, and Padua is my big C64 group.
There was a lot of discussion on Puet recently that Vantage had released an Atari 2600 demo, as a matter of fact, or an Atari 2600 intro, I should say. And as far as I know, that's the first Atari 2600 intro ever created.
I think so. There was another intro for this machine too on Puet, I think. But as far as I know, we are among the first ones doing some demo scene stuff on this machine, yes.
Does Vantage itself have any future plans to release Atari 2600 demos?
Depends on the coder of that intro. He pretty much does what he likes, and he likes the Atari machine, so it could be that there will be new stuff from us, yeah.
For the people who haven't checked this out yet, the intro that I'm referring to is titled appropriately enough 2600, and it placed first at the Buensley Wild Competition at the Buensley Demo Party in Switzerland, which you are also an organizer for.
That's true. I have to correct you. It didn't place first in the Wild Competition, but in the Alternative Demo Competition.
You're one of the primary organizers for Buensley. How did you come into that role? I understand that Buensley's been running for a good number of years. Can you tell us a little history about when Buensley started and then how you came into the role of an organizer there?
Yeah, actually, I'm the main organizer since last year. And but Buensley is existing since 1996, and back then I was not really part of the team, and I didn't go to Buensley either because I was pretty much stuck to the C64, and Buensley in the beginning was a PC-only party, and it was founded by some guys from Switzerland who met up at Mecca party in Germany. It was 96, I think, early 96, and well, with time, the Buensley party started to grow and changed location several times. We had a great location in Bern, the capital of Switzerland, but it got too expensive, so we changed to Winterthur, which is a smaller city in the northeast of Switzerland.
From what I understand, one of the things that kind of separates Buensley or differentiates it from other demo parties is that it kind of has more of a chill-like atmosphere, really kind of relaxing and chill-like atmosphere.
That is very true, and that's also our first intent of the party, to differ a little bit from other parties with being a bit more exquisite and friendly and chilling. We also provide a great chill corner and have non-stop entertainment on the big screens, cheap food support, and generally we always have a great mood at Buensley. That's what people like about it.
I mean, wasn't it even for a few years actually held at some sort of disco club or something?
Yeah, it was held in a disco from, well, let's say 98 to 2002. It was great because that room had a gallery and all the sound equipment built in, and they also had the bar opened all the time, 24 hours.
Oh, you gotta have that.
That's a must-have, definitely. And that's also what we are providing now at the new location, but with private organizing for the bar, and it's not from the location, or not provided from the location owners this time. But still, we are having all the drinks, open beer, and yeah.
I think you mentioned that Buensley started in 1996.
Exactly, yeah.
Speaking as somebody who has organized a demo party and is really interested in the growth of demo parties, what sort of attendance figures did Buensley 96 have versus what it has today, and how has it grown?
Yeah, back then, in the first Buensley parties, there were like 20 people joining together, meeting, and, well, probably copying software and hanging around. They had also some kind of competition, but just one competition where all sorts of productions could be handed in. And with time, when the locations got bigger, also more people joined in. And always when we had to change the location, it broke down a little bit, but soon again we had more people. Today we had, at the last Buensley, which took place in August, we had 140 people, and we are proud of this because all of them were seniors.
What were some of the more noteworthy productions that you saw at Buensley 2004?
Of course, I want to mention the OHP competition entries.
The overhead projector competition.
Exactly. They were really amusing, and people loved them very much, and it was pretty cool to see them live on the screen. And we also have videos available of them, so downloading is wanted. As for the regular productions, I'd like to mention the Winner Wild demo, which was called $21 from Orion, a Flash thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you already been talking about the alternative demo winner.
Yes.
The Terry thing. And also the surprise competition demo was great, especially if you consider that it was done in less than 24 hours. And the 4K winner was the BCN invitation from Fashion, which was also very good.
As an organizer yourself, what were some of the greatest challenges that you had in organizing Wensley 2004 and previous parties that you've organized as well, and what have you learned from those challenges?
Yeah, as being the main organizer, I take the main responsibility, and I also have to do all the coordination with the other team members, as well as with our providers for sound equipment, video equipment. And generally, I have to kick everybody's ass that the next Bünzli is going to take place again. And I'm also, at the party itself, I'm also responsible for speaking and being the official person for journalists and representatives of the town and everything. And I think I profit quite a lot out of this, because I'm also organizing stuff in the so-called real life now. I learned quite a lot with this.
I'd actually like to go back to the Pain magazine. I'm actually a big fan of the magazine. For those that don't know, what exactly is your involvement with the magazine? And
I'm the main editor and leader of the staff behind Pain. And generally, I'm doing the same as with Bünzli. I'm kicking people's asses to create new issues and articles, and coordinating it all and putting it together in the end, and I'm also layouting all the articles.
That's excellent. A lot of respect for that. Pain is one of my favorite magazines.
Thanks, that's great to hear.
Pain has really come a long way. I mean, I can recall the days when Pain was an anti-magazine, and it's good to see something that's still going strong as a disc mag. It's one of the few remaining respected disc mags in the scene today, I think.
We do our best, and yeah. I try to promise that there will be another issue this year.
Excellent.
Since we're talking about it, do you have any sort of deadline for article submissions for the next issue, or do you have any estimated release date for the next issue?
Well, our plannings tend towards December. We think that December or somewhere around Christmas would be realistic.
Excellent. If people want to check out product releases, compo releases from Wensley, where should they go to check those out?
CNORG is always a good thing to check out for this. And we also have a large after-party page on our website, which is www.bünz.li.
Cool. Very good.
I just want to say, you know, a lot of respect to you for everything that you're doing. Doing big things, and sounds like you got your hands full.
You know, I have a lot of admiration for all of the different projects that you're undertaking there. Running a magazine, running a group, being affiliated with additional groups, and a demo party, that's a huge undertaking there.
Yeah, it's actually almost too much, but I'm trying to keep up with it all the time.
Yeah, it seems like it's a pretty consuming lifestyle, scene lifestyle you have there.
Definitely, yeah.
I think that's all I have. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, Unlock?
Okay, I'm proud to be on your radio show, and greetings to all the listeners.
All right, well, Unlock, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule this evening, and enjoy the movie that you're going to go see later on tonight.
Thank you, and thank you for the call and the interview.
All right, take care. Okay, so that was our interview with Unlock Advantage, with Scour there filling in as co-host. On the thread of demo parties, Pilgrimage 2004, which you two both had an opportunity to attend.
Yeah, I had a great time, man.
You guys both traveled pretty far. I mean, where did you guys come from to make it out to Pilgrimage this year?
You go ahead first, Sonic. I flew out to Salt Lake City from San Francisco, California.
and it was the first demo party I've ever been to, and I felt it was pretty amazing. I had a really good time. I would have to say that the old school trivia contest was the highlight.
Oh, the Pilgrim quiz.
Yeah, getting a girl in a bikini printed out as ASCII art as a prize is pretty amazing.
I almost had it.
That's right, Halifax. You're actually a contestant at Pilgrimage Pilgrim quiz, right?
Well, I was in the quiz show, and I also entered the text mode competition, which apparently wasn't incredibly popular, but
I drove up, let's see,
I think it was 18, maybe 19 hours from central Missouri down to Salt Lake City. I crossed like 5-6 states. It was pretty cool.
You actually drove out with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, me and Polygon Breasts and a friend of mine who has no link to the scene except that he owns a computer to play Counter-Strike. But he had a good time anyway.
I think actually your friend was our single gamer. We didn't have any gamers at the
party.
Yeah,
he was the only one. He was trying to get some Counter-Strike action going on when he got down there. And, yeah, he had no luck whatsoever. People just gave him a blank stare when he was asking them about it.
Actually, I think that's pretty great that we had a token gamer at the party.
He just so happened to be the token black guy on top of that.
That guy was cool, though, definitely.
Yeah, Coyler's a good guy.
Yeah, a lot of people did enjoy the Pilgrim Quiz game show that was hosted by Jason Scott and Severina.
Severina had some fantastic questions. She knows more than I could ever possibly cram into my head in a lifetime.
They were a perfect match. I mean, Jason Scott, he's also, you know, a walking encyclopedia on underground scene knowledge, but Severina really just laid it down right there for everybody else as well. I think somebody compared her to the Alex Trebek of the underground scene.
I could see that.
She has a great deal of knowledge about the art scene and the hacking scene. And
she's freaking a DJ.
Scene. And she's a DJ
she's
on
a
top
great
of that.
DJ. She played a lot of tracks I hadn't heard in quite some time.
And she's an artist. I think she brought a Wacom tablet and was pulling out some art.
Yep, she's an artist. She also creates her own music, so, I mean...
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that really is.
The quiz show was pretty well put together for the limitations of the hotel. Just hearing all the old acronyms during the lightning round or whatever, that really took me back to my BBSing days, being like a 14-year-old kid calling long distance to South Carolina or something to download the latest Bad Pack or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was good stuff. That was definitely the first time I've been in a room with as many people that... kind of had congruent experiences as an adolescent, you know, in the Midwest or wherever.
Pilgrimage really did bring the underground community together. I mean, the Pilgrimage doubled its attendance from last year, where in 2003 they had somewhere between 70 to 75 people. Nearly 150 people attended this year, so they're on the right track. Legalize, in his opening statements, promised to make this the longest-running demo party in the United States and all of North America, which really only requires 2 more years running to do so.
Yeah, I was surprised by that fact that no one's ever made it beyond 3.
Yeah, as far as North America goes, there's been Spring Break, which was held in San Diego, California for a number of years, and then COMA, that used to take place in the French-speaking part of Canada in Quebec near Montreal. So those both ran for 3 years, and then that was it. So
I'm totally going to go next year for sure.
Yeah, Holiday Inn was great, but... hopefully next year there will be something bigger and better. Have you seen that video?
Yeah. Spin Sane was all disappointed that I wasn't in the Pilgrimage After Dark, but honestly, I spent most of my time while I was there in my room working on the text mode compo entry because I was nowhere near finished when I got there.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that was finished on the spot.
Yeah, I finished at least the last 3 or 4 letters while I was at the hotel.
It's kind of funny. I mean, there's still a lot of activity brewing about in the text mode scene, and Pilgrimage is not alone in this. It does kind of strike me as odd that at demo parties, there seems to be a lot of almost, you know, last-minute or rushed entries submitted. I guess it doesn't make sense to me why, when there's all of these great entries by the same artists that are coming out month after month in a pack.
Yeah.
Pilgrimage is no exception to this. At Assembly, while there were some very good entries in the anti-ASCII compo, I've seen better entries by those same artists. We were all in different places at different times throughout the party, so, I mean, there were different events where we all kind of hooked up and stuff at the party, but what were some of the highlights for you guys?
Probably watching that kid crack out on Dance Dance Revolution. I don't remember his name, but he was completely insane on that game. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think there was rumor that the Utah state champion was in attendance at pilgrimage, just there to pick up the grand prize and leave.
So. Yeah, he was awesome, though, man. He didn't miss a beat. I mean, every time he got done with a level or whatever, it'd be like, it's a new record! Every single time.
Were you there for any of that, Sonic?
No, I missed out. I was actually totally sleep-deprived when I got there. I hadn't slept, so I ended up catching up on sleep during the DDR competitions.
Yeah, that was scheduled early in the morning.
I definitely had a good time just talking to a lot of the people that were there. I hung out with Trickster, like, in his hotel room when he was finishing up his 88 Corruption demo on the PC, and he was all hacking away in Turbo Pascal, and that was just pretty cool to see someone doing that, you know?
Yeah, there were some amazing wildcard competition entries there, and Trickster's...
Including Sonic's.
Yeah.
That was awesome, dude.
Yeah, yours was great,
Kudos
too, man.
Kudos for that. I really liked it.
Thank you.
Trickster's had first place. It was really a hands-down, unanimous vote. And
yeah, he deserved it, definitely.
Yeah, of course. That was amazing.
8088 Corruption was coded, and it was written on an IBM Model 5150 desktop, a 4.77 megahertz PC.
Yeah.
And, I mean, hardcore. He's coding in Turbo Pascal, right?
Yeah, he was doing old school.
Do you remember, like, any of the technical specifics about that demo?
Yeah, he was having some really difficult problems to get around, specifically with streaming he kind of made up this proprietary video format to hold his video and audio, and the bottleneck was the actual hard drive channel, getting it off of the drive fast enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would run into a caching problem.
Getting, like, these crazy buffering tricks and things to get it off the disk fast enough to be able to play. And, of course, he wrote his own Sound Blaster routines, which I don't think had ever been able to... Nobody had ever made anything like that for an 8088 before, at least not Turbo Pascal. So he did a lot of really interesting stuff for that demo and put kind of an absurd amount of work into it, I would say, but the end result is definitely impressive.
Yeah, it really was. Full-frame motion video and digitized sound going on in CGA text mode. I mean, that's fucking badass. There was many enjoyable moments there. The pilgrimage after party is definitely one of them that ranks way high up there. But one of the most interesting moments for me was the speech that was given by Elwix. Did either of you have a chance to attend that?
No, that was when I was sleep-deprived. So.
What was his speech about?
Remembering
the roots.
Yeah.
Commodore 64 demo scene talk.
Yeah, I missed that.
I really did want to go, but man, I could not keep my eyes open to save my life.
That speech was just amazing. It was a true eye-opener. I mean, he did all these contrasts and comparisons to the present-day demo scene, and he had actual evidence of people in North American demo groups or, you know, not really even demo groups per se, but North American Commodore 64 cracking groups that wrote intros. What I found really interesting was that there were nods to the European demo scene even then in the 80s. I don't remember exactly, but to paraphrase what he said was, we're not as good as, you know, the Europeans, but we're having fun doing it anyways, and that's what matters.
Exactly.
Well, that's older than the ASCII scene as we know it. Or
yeah.
The ANSI scene as well, I would guess.
No, it is. At least the scene as we know it, it is.
Yeah.
What
Speaking
else?
Of which, before I forget, while we're on the topic of pilgrimage, Lord Jazz was there, and I got to shake his hand and sign my copy of Dark Domain, and I crapped myself. And I don't care how much shit I get for saying that. It was awesome.
Yep.
I am a nerd, and I do not care.
Yes, the legendary Lord Jazz, you know, god of the ANSI scene to some.
Yeah, man, I would like to personally thank him for not entering the text mode compo, or I never would have gotten second.
That's
He's a really nice guy, too.
Yeah, that was definitely cool that Lord Jazz could come, and actually he had a bit of difficulty making it out there. I don't know if you guys recall, but there was a lot of storms happening in the southeastern states. And that was definitely affecting some of the flights. But yeah, since you guys were passed out while Elwix was giving his speech, there are a couple sites where you can pick up the recordings of those speeches. The URL for that is cache.cow.net/pilgrimage. There's a huge repository of compo entries, recorded audio speeches, photographs, and other videos there. So you can definitely check those out there. A lot of the material is also mirrored on scene.org if you're getting a slow connection, and photos are on Slengpung as well. Anyhow, I made reference to it earlier, but Jason Scott, the maker of the VBS documentary, created a really cool short film called Pilgrimage After Dark, which videos some of the antics that some of us got into during the off hours at Pilgrimage, I guess you could say. That's also on the Cash Cow Net site as well.
Get to see Radman with his shirt off.
Well, yes. Okay, in closing, Pilgrimage, I think, you know, in its second year, it's headed on the right track. Rich has made this commitment to make it the longest-running North American demo party, and I believe that with commitment and the proper attitude, Pilgrimage will continue to go far and make that goal.
If you're in North America, you have no reason not to go, because it is the only demo party that there is.
True. I think overall people had a good time. That's really what it, you know, that's what it all boils down
to. Yeah,
it
can only get better every year.
And I got to say, like, it's definitely something that's worth putting, you know, setting aside some time for and putting the money aside to go, because it's a totally one-of-a-kind, unique experience. And if any of the people listening are really into this kind of stuff, it's like, it's a really, really cool thing. I think we should definitely work to build more of a community in North America around this stuff.
Don't worry about the money, because I overdrafted about $200 when I got back to Missouri, and I just now paid it off. So, you know, don't even consider that as stopping you from going down to Utah.
Exactly.
The memories are priceless, right?
Exactly.
And I mean, really, it's a true honor to be in a room with so many great minds from all over the world, you know, in the North American scene and other, you know, otherwise. It's unbelievable to have all of that talent housed in one place at one time and to be able to talk to these people that maybe you've looked up to for so long or what have you. It really is a great honor, and I'm really
thankful. Very humbling.
And so much respect to everybody who showed up. Also much respect to anybody else who's ever organized a party anywhere in the world, because it's a lot of work, but at the end, it's all worth it. While on the subject of parties and video recordings from demo parties, just today, actually, Assembly has released some of their highly anticipated seminar recordings. Those can be grabbed at ftp.edome.net/events/assembly04/VOD/seminars.
Yeah, it's about time, man. All I could get a hold of was, like, their little TV show that they had on the side.
Yeah, Pilgrimage preempted Assembly on that, which was surprising. I was actually wondering for a while if perhaps they were just going to hold out for the DVD, but it looks like they're finally out there, so go grab those. Also out today, Scene Zine Issue 16 was just released today. There's a great party report written by Polaris in there on Pilgrimage 2004. There's also some very well-written tutorials from the likes of DJ Mirage, Patrick Groove, and several others. Check that out. You can read that at www.scenerep.org. In other news, there's an upcoming event which is going to be taking place locally here in California called Vintage Computer Festival 7, or 7.0. It's taking place next weekend on November 6th through 7th. Saturday and Sunday, 2004, and it's going to be held at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. Intense, you're going to that.
Absolutely.
And I wish we had a Computer History Museum.
This museum is actually pretty badass. It has a record for the most historical computer artifacts in a museum. The stats are on Wikipedia. They're pretty insane.
And you're giving a speech there, right?
Yes, I'll be speaking there. I'll be speaking, actually, in between Jason Scott and Tom Jennings, the inventor of FidoNet. So that'll be pretty humbling right there.
Yeah, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Are you giving another text mode art lecture?
Yes.
I know you've been going through steps, like, you know, from Assembly to Pilgrimage to Vintage, just kind of improving on the old model for your speech.
Yes, exactly. This is the end run of the circuit for the year of my presentations. It's the same presentation that I gave at Assembly and Pilgrimage. It differs a lot from the one that was delivered at Nauticon, but there's very little material that overlaps, because this is much more text mode oriented, whereas the one at Nauticon was very general historical computer art, delved into music and other areas and demos and such, whereas this is pure text. But yeah, it's the same thing basically, a couple tweaks here and there. But yeah, I mean, you guys have both been in the BBSing scene. Everybody knows what FidoNet is. In fact, some of the material that I used to research for my speech was written by Tom Jennings.
It's still incredibly active, too.
Yeah.
I just got it on my board a couple months ago, and I was surprised to see the amount of traffic that's still going through it.
They have some sort of Usenet connection, I believe, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of news gates that are a part of it now as well, and web access BBSs and that sort of thing.
Also at the VCF 7 is going to be the BBS documentary screening and world premiere, which has recently received some exposure on Tech TV. Actually, Tech TV is given the exposure to both VCF 7 and the BBS documentary. For those who missed the short commercial of sorts for BBS documentary that was on Tech TV.
The banter.
Yeah, it ran for about a week, and I think they showed it 40 times. If you want to grab that, the URL is pretty long, so I've tiny URL'd it. It's tinyurl.com/6j8xj. That's been receiving a lot of coverage. That's pretty exciting. BBS documentary is going to be shown there for the first time. It's the beta premiere, basically, before all the final edits are made. And there's going to be some notable members of the art scene in the audience watching that. I've received word from Jed that he's going to be traveling from Los Angeles to come see it. And I've also heard from Lord Soth, who's in the Bay Area, so it's not too much of a trek for him. He's going to be there as well. So there will be some, what, infamous characters from the art scene there?
That'd be an appropriate word. Kind of weird watching that Tech TV clip. Do yourself a favor if you haven't seen it and watch it, because he says he ran a World War IV board.
I know.
However many years. And I think he even says it like WWIV.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It was great, dude. I died laughing.
Yeah.
He was probably one of those jackasses who, like, never changed a screen or stole them from an acid pack or, like, drew up a gay pumpkin every Halloween and put that antsy on the login or something.
Well, I mean, the documentary, it's a seven-part series, so it's covering all sorts of a wide range of different BBSers. So there are going to be those people who had the Uber.
Yeah, and, you know, where would we be without them, honestly? I'm not trying to josh the PD people so much. I'm just, yeah, man, I like boards with good art is basically what it comes down to.
So you're saying you're anti-PD pumpkin.
Yeah, I don't really appreciate the antsy candy cane every Christmas, you know?
Oh, man.
Or, like, a big stupid turkey that's all F3 blocks or something like that, you know?
Yep.
Come on now, you guys know that you've drawn one of those turkeys. We
oh,
all started
totally,
off.
Man. I mean, I don't even do antsy, so when I try, it generally winds up like, you know, like I crapped on my monitor.
Now, there is a lot of crap out there, though. I mean, even now, if you go just to Google and type in ASCII art or TextMate art or ANSI art.
Oh, man, yeah, it's a mess.
You're not even going to get, you won't even see anything on the first probably five results pages that's anything from the scene. It's all going to be this totally whack art, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then eventually you'll get to, like, an Acheron link or
exactly.
Link or something like that.
Actually, the same thing is true with digital art in general.
Yeah.
You type digital art, you're just going to get the worst, like, Kai's Power Tools shit in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah, all kinds of newbies, I guess.
Uh-huh,
fractal. People that just don't really care about it.
Yeah.
I think that rule does apply across the board. I mean, 90% of all productions are crap. What are you going to do?
Got to listen to the art.
Control.
They can't all be Jeds and Lord Jazzes of the scene, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, the BBS documentary, it is a seven-part series documentary that spans across three different DVDs. It just went on sale this month. For the folks that pre-order before November 10th, they actually get to submit a paragraph of text, which will be placed on a file on one of the actual DVDs forever. And it looks like the DVD itself is slated to ship by the end of December this year.
Well, I'll be ordering my copy before November 10th, hopefully.
Yeah, me too.
So if you'd like more information on the BBS documentary or this Vintage Computer Festival, the Vintage Computer Festival website is www.vintage.org, and BBS documentary is bbsdocumentary.com, so that's easy enough.
Pretty straightforward, yeah.
Last episode, we spoke a great deal about books and the ubiquitous Amazon.com and how Dark Domain was added to Amazon.com. Another book that we've been discussing on a few of our shows, Demoscene, The Art of Real Time, is now on Amazon.com as well. And we have an interview here that Scour and I did earlier this morning with Rar, or Raver, from Finland. And so we'll go ahead and play that now. This is a pre-recorded interview. Okay, we're now speaking live with Rar, the editor of the newly released Demo Scene book, which we've spoken about a few times on the show. It's titled Demo Scene, The Art of Real Time. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Nice to hear about you finally. It took a lot of time before we get to do this. Great to be here.
We've actually been trying to meet up and sync up on the show a few episodes, and it's good to finally have you on. I was actually speaking to Scour before I added you to the show. This is something that we spoke about when I was in Helsinki for the week. Your handle is Rar, but it's spelled R-A-W-E-R, but it was possible that it could also be interpreted as Raver, as a double V rather than a double U.
Yeah, people use both, but I've been using Raver for most of the time, so it really doesn't matter. Cause, it gets mixed with Ravers, so it's better to remember that there's a W. So it just sounded cool when I took it, so it was enough. It really doesn't mean anything. I used to have a different handle, but then I found out in the beginning that the guy from Scoobex had the exact same handle, so I changed it to the current one.
If you don't mind me asking, what was your handle before your current one that you have now?
It was Syntec. It was a record label in Europe that released a small album from a band called Syntec. And I took it from there because I liked the music, but I had to change it because there was a guy from Scoobex in Finland who used to sing. And he was also a musician, so...
Before we get to the book itself, can you tell us a little bit about you and how you got started in the scene and what platform you began with?
Yeah, I started out with Commodore 64, basically. I tried other computers before that, but didn't really do anything. But Commodore was the first one when I actually tried to do something by myself, like some basic programming and some graphics. But then I had a friend called Devil who was in ECA. He introduced me to tracking games, and I got some of my first demos from him for Commodore 64, and immediately got interested in. When I got Amiga 500, that was the huge thing, so I started to do graphics and music, and with the first song tracker, and formed my own group back then. So basically the very typical story from the late 80s, I think.
If you can recall, what sort of intros or demos were you seeing in those early years in the late 1980s on the Commodore 64? Are there any groups or releases that stand out prominently in your mind from those times?
Yes, of course. I remember Byte Draper's demos from late 80s, like Follow the Sign and stuff like that. But the biggest thing for me was X-Men on Amiga 500, because a guy from X-Men called Oxa back then was at the same school as I was. He was in a higher class, and I had a friend who got some X-Men demos and tracks from the guy. So those were quite cool at the time, and stuff from Finnish Gold and stuff like that. So I got introduced to the early Finnish scene quite nicely, so we were kind of big fans with the... All my friends and wanted to do what the big boys were doing. But of course, I think the biggest thing for me was the Red Sector Mega Demo, which is one of the legendary ones. It had all the elements that you wanted to do by yourself. And Romeo Knight was always my kind of a hero. He was using his own samples back then and really reinvented lots of things when it comes to using trackers and stuff like that.
What was your main inspiration for creating the Demo Scene book?
Well, it's been discussed for so long. I think with Grendel from Byte Rapers and many other people have been talking about, at least here in Finland, that there should be a book. And it was kind of my dream for a long, long time. Because I basically had a long break from the Demo Scene. I kind of quit the scene in 1993, I think, and did some art studies and stuff like that, so I kind of got back later on. But during the time when I studied other arts, traditional arts and stuff like that, philosophy, so I kind of saw a scene from the other direction and kind of remembered how great it was, but then I kind of figured out how special it was when it comes to media art and stuff like that, so the book was in the planning for a long time. But what actually happened 2,000 visitors. So, and not just demo singers, of course, but lots of young audience really gave us good feedback, that kind of the PlayStation generation. And to my surprise, the audience from age 30 to 40, I think, or like women who were in their 40s or 50s, they really liked the exhibition because they remembered that they bought the Commodore to their kids and stuff like that. So I kind of realized that the demo scene is really a bigger thing, because parents maybe didn't know what their kids were doing with the Commodore or Amiga and what demos were about, but they were really interested what their kids were doing. So it was really a kind of a wider thing that maybe we have except or thought ourselves. So so I kind of wanted to do a book about the demo scene, not just for demo singers, but kind of opening up the thing to the wider audience. That was the main thing.
That's very interesting. I've never thought about it like that, but I guess in some respects it kind of comes around full circle then. And so then these people that were parents of these children that they purchased this Commodore for could then see this almost, you know, decades later. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and I think that it's natural if you're a parent to a kid, you are interested in what he's doing or she. But I think that at least here in Europe, when you bought the first home computer in the 80s or in the beginning of the 90s, it was really a big thing, like having the electricity for the first time way earlier. But now you get like, you were the advanced family when you got the home computer, so it was really a big thing back then. So the people who bought them then were really kind of a following what you could do with them, and that's kind of a nice thing to see that the older people are also remembering those times as romantic and kind of basically have some kind of relation to demos. Maybe don't even understand, but they remember them.
Now, this book itself, it's 72 pages, full color, beautiful color, by the way. They did an excellent job printing these books. The color itself is very, very vivid, and there's some great screen captures in here and photographs as well. Some people have stated that they feel that the book is somewhat Finnish-centric or Scandinavian-centric. Do you have any response to that, or was that intended? I know that a lot of the scene is based from the Northern European region, so I was just wondering if there was any intent behind that, or...
Yeah, it was intended, because as we all know, demo scene is really a big thing. So if you start to write about it, you have to choose what you can include and what you want to say about it. It was really a difficult choice to make, because if I would have started to write the whole history about the demos and all the groups and productions and all the different subcultures that exist, I would be still writing it for like 10 years or so. So I basically choose the thing that I know best, which are the groups that are close to me and the scene here in the Nordic countries. But then again, as it was a follow-up to the exhibition that was kind of a catastrophe thing or catastrophe by organization, because we were running organized it, so I kind of wanted to have those people involved, because I could really get the copyrights and the permissions and get them involved to the process. So that was a kind of a practical reason. But I think that I really don't think that my book is supposed to be like the final book ever, or as you know, there are other projects going on, and there are CD-ROMs and DVDs coming out all the time. So it's just the one point of view that I wanted to do, and hopefully other people are going to write about the other scenes around the world. So yes, I admit that it's basically a Nordic thing. That's the when it comes to having screenshots or groups mentioned, but I think I tried to write kind of an overall history article that gives new things to the scene as well from the art point of view, not just listing demos and listing, you know, productions and parties, but instead of kind of trying to figure out if demos are art or what's the meaning of demos to media art and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I view this book as not something that's claiming to be the end-all book on demo scenery, but... Rather, something
right.
That's more of a primer or an introduction to the demo scene. I mean, it's billed as a coffee table book, and it's an excellent conversation piece as it stands. It's full of great pictures and basically serves as, you know, again, an excellent introductory primer sort of book to show people, here, this is what the demo scene is about, and this is what it's done, and this is what it's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I spent a lot of time before the book running around in different media art festivals in Europe. So it was also always a difficult thing to explain what the demo scene is all about. So now it's easier when you have the book and you can say, just get it and read the article so you get the overall picture of what it's all about. And if you want to know more, you can get the DVD, go to these websites and see these productions. But this is the introduction, and it's a tool that hopefully people can use to get their own projects through and get their own books and DVDs funded. And it's just the beginning for me, and hopefully for other people as well.
Yeah, hopefully other people will follow up on this and go off on different tangents and write additional books that complement this.
Yeah.
There was a funny, memorable post that I read on a bulletin board somewhere that said, you know, I gave this book to my girlfriend to show her what I've been doing all this time. Because it's something very, it's difficult to explain. The scene, the scene itself is a very general term, and it involves so many different elements and so many different things, and it's like a complex organism. It's, in some aspects, it, like you said, you'd be writing a book for more than 10 years. You could never really finish a book if you tried to write everything. And, you know, in my opinion, you have to draw a line somewhere. And I think you did a great job. For people who want to pick up this book, they can go to www.evenlakestudios.com or amazon.com. It's been recently added to Amazon as well. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, it's just basically there were really a lot of other people involved in writing the book as well. There were articles from Ben from Norway. He's one of the organizers of the gathering party, and there's the guy from Denmark who wrote the article about the Little Sound DJ, which is a program for making music for Game Boys, and my good friend Marcus, who did the all the graphics and the layout and desktop of CNCD, who did the cover graphics. So it's not just mine, but there were really lots of other people involved, plus all the feedback that I got from different people who read the script and stuff like that.
Yeah, as I understand it, Trickster was actually one of the people who proofread and checked everything for facts and accuracy.
Yeah, and he's been really doing a great job when it comes to documenting the scene with the DVDs and his websites and stuff like that. So I think in many ways he's the one who started really documenting the scene in the beginning, or one of them at least.
It's really great. I love what you're doing here. I was involved with demos myself ages ago, decades, you know. But
yeah,
and it's really great to finally see some real media getting published about the demo scene. It's a great start. It just opens people's eyes that don't realize what's going on actually with computers and Commodores and, you know, the Amiga and stuff. And it's a really great thing. And I respect you a lot for what you've been doing.
Once again, this book is on sale now. You can pick up a copy at www.evenlakestudios.com. or Amazon.com, and the name of the book is Demo Scene, The Art of Real Time. Raver, it's been really good speaking with you. Thank you very much for coming on the show and talking with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for the interview, and hopefully I'll see you at the next party somewhere around the globe.
And once again, that was Raver, the editor of Demo Scene, The Art of Real Time. Okay, so let's just move on along to art scene news. Two mega ASCII art packs were released recently, SAC Pack 31 and Remorse Pack 55.
Word them up.
These were some incredible packs, I really must say. These were some power packs. The SAC Pack had 124 pieces in it, at least, and Remorse, 118. I mean, these are some real chart-topping art packs that came out here this month and in late September.
Yeah, Nerve's old-school collie that was in the SAC Pack was just absolutely beautiful. I love that. I think it was killing a butterfly with a bulldozer or something like that. I can't remember the name right now.
Yeah, Nerve had a lot of great work in there, as did, I believe, Webpigio, right?
Or Web Pigeon, or whatever he calls himself.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some really good pieces by him in there as well. And, of course, Scour.
Scour was in there representing for both, right? Remorse and SAC. I know he wanted to say some words on the SAC pack, but unfortunately he's... his phone battery died, and he had to go. Today is Halloween, so I'm sure he probably has things to do there since he's on the East Coast. But, yeah, those were some great packs, and the Remorse pack as well. There was the collie from Silas.
Yes.
That thing was amazing, and it was just full of great ASCII art and poetry.
Yeah, he brought the lit aspect back into it for a brief glimpse of the way it used to be, I suppose, instead of just lyrics.
So, listen, I gotta go, you guys, but thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been really great talking to you, and I look forward to seeing what else everybody's doing in the art scene.
Cool, man. Hey, Intense, thank you very much for being a co-host for us, filling in for Spin Sane today, man.
No problem. Have a good one, Radman, and Halifax.
Yeah, later on.
Hey, where are you going?
Bummer, I wanted to talk to him a little bit more about his Halloween costume, dude.
Oh, what's he going to be?
Well, he's actually already started going out in it. He's already hit up a couple parties, I believe, yesterday. He has this awesome outfit. Have you ever seen the Rock Me Amadeus video?
No, but I'm familiar with the song anyway.
Well, I'm sure you can just imagine.
The Austrian musician kind of thing.
You know, he's all done up in one of those costumes, and then he has accented with some heavy black sunglasses, like these just outrageous sunglasses.
Is he wearing a powdered wig and everything?
Everything, dude. He sent me a picture of it, dude. It's classic.
Advertise the link if he's not going to be on to talk about it.
Let's see if I can find it. The URL for that is chillproductions.com/smason/dscn0199.jpg. Wolfgang Mozart.
Oh, man, I can see it now. That is fantastic. It's like those sunglasses people wear over their glasses.
It's like those sunglasses that old ladies wear when they're driving.
Yeah. It's like, just, even the parts that go behind your ears are made out of the same sunglass material. That's great.
That's a great costume. All right, well, back to Art Scene News. Sack in the Remorse Packs came out. Mimic 75 also came out with a paltry 11 pieces. It was a small showing, but then again, they do release on a monthly basis. So
yeah.
Ice has also been in the news a lot lately on different art blogs and art sites. They don't really release packs per se in the traditional sense anymore. They stopped releasing zipped packs in, I believe, 2002, in the summer of 2002. Ice released something that they called a Zoom quilt, which has been receiving a lot of publicity. It used to be stored on one of their user sites, razgul.ice.org. Then it was also on the ice.org main site when their pack came out this month. And it's been moved because of all the traffic that it was receiving. Ice.org normally receives about 35, 37 gigs of traffic per month, according to one of their admins. And this month, as a direct result of this Zoom quilt, they consumed over a terabyte and a half of bandwidth, and they cost ICE nearly $1,000 just to cover the overages from their ISP.
That's quite a lot of data being chucked around.
Yeah, considering that the file is only a 2-meg flash file. So basically what it is it's a take on their tiles project, where they have a tiles project where they'll draw a little square, you know, a two-dimensional bitmap, and then somebody else will connect it, you know, and just kind of continue on in this, like, mosaic fashion, right?
Yeah.
There's a new URL for it. It's zoomquilt.nikki.net with three Ks. That's where it's being hosted now. So the way that they accomplished this was they drew a frame and then kind of had a hole punched out in the center. And the next artist would draw another frame of the exact same size that would kind of connect with that previous frame. And so then what would happen is you could actually view 10 frames at a time at different scales. And then it just continuously in a loop zooms into itself. And you can go backwards or forwards, and it's like this endless image, basically, that you kind of go into or zoom out of.
Yeah, the link is working now. It's just like a meg and a half. I probably won't have it by the time we're still talking about it, so whatever.
So you have a computer that's on par with SpinSane's video card. On the Zoom Quilt website there, you can actually see the individual frames that were created by different artists. I think there was approximately a dozen different artists that created these different frame tiles to make this Zoom Quilt here. And so you can see how it was done. You can step through it either by viewing the AVI animation or the Flash animation, or there's also an HTML version, which isn't as exciting, but either way, they're all very cool.
They all get the point across.
Yeah.
Anyway.
In other art scene news, ThugLife.org is being updated again as of early September. Pogue has been adding new features. He's introduced what he calls Thug Life 5.0. He's recently added RSS support for those of you who use FeedReader or another RSS aggregator of that kind. You can now view his site with your reader. He's also began adding new features, and so it's nice to see Thug Life coming back to life, I guess you could say.
Well, out of context, I don't use it anymore.
Well, there are some other issues going on with Thug Life, right?
Yeah. But it is good to see that it's at least continually being updated instead of just another abandoned scene site, which there seem to be plenty of.
Yeah, definitely. On Thug Life, I just read today, one of their new news items is that Texmo Demo Contest 7 is on the horizon. The 7th pseudo-annual Texmo Demo Contest is coming up in the next few months, and their invitation demo was just released today. Rumor has it that the Finnish Wonders, Antichrist, and Brightlight have yet another fine release up their sleeves for TMDC 7, so I can't wait to check that out. That'll be pretty cool. The deadline for Texmo Demo Contest 7, if you're interested in entering, is December 12th, 2004. You can check out their website for more details. That's www.taat.fi/TMDC. They have a number of sponsors this year. Acid is sponsoring some Dark Domain DVDs. The Alternative Party is sponsoring some party tickets there. Who else? Oh, yeah. Purple Motion has donated several copies of the music disc audio CD he recently released. So there's some nice prizes there for whoever wins this competition. Texmo demos are nothing new to the scene. Demo groups have been releasing Texmo demos and intros for a good number of years, for over a decade and a half, with the likes of groups such as The Sorcerers and even Future Crew have been releasing Texmo intros since the early 90s, really, and even the late 1980s. But one of the most noteworthy demos that I can think of, or a personal favorite of mine, is Textro by The Overthrow Machine, or OTM. But unfortunately, with the introduction of new operating systems such as, Windows 2000 and XP, that doesn't run anymore. I mean, it just doesn't run either, period, or it doesn't run well, or there's certain scenes that don't render properly on the screen.
Yeah, it used to be to where you could directly access all of your hardware while you were programming, which is why demos like Trickster's 8088 they're very smooth. They're directly fucking with the video card, but nowadays there's a hardware abstraction layer that Windows has added, and so everything that you're doing is going through this filter and being translated.
Right, so there was some effects in Textro, which basically was displaying line vector animation by hacking the character set in real time per page. And that's something that, unfortunately, doesn't come across at all with that hardware abstraction layer.
Yeah, it's still possible to change the character set, of course, because things like AFS.com and any of the font sets you can get as a command file still work if you're in full screen. It's just that it's nowhere near as fast as it used to be, so it's no longer feasible to do it that way.
My Red Bull buzz is starting to kick in now.
I'm schwilling on a Bully Porter from Boulevard Brewing Company in Kansas City.
All right, dude, you'd make Spinsane proud.
Well, I haven't had as many as he would have by now, most likely, but I'm not absolutely sure.
Speaking of old-school demos and Texmo demos, a new version of DOSBox was recently released. DOSBox is an emulator which emulates IBM PCs running DOS from, the old days. Version 0.62 came out, which includes a vastly improved GUS emulation and support, and it plays many of the old demos which didn't previously operate well or at all under DOSBox. And one of the demos which it happens to play now is Textro. So you can pick up DOSBox 0.62 and try Textro or another demo. The authors of the Pain Dismag happen to maintain a DOSBox demo compatibility list, and they list 89 old-school demos which run under DOSBox. So if you want to check that out, the URL for that is pain.scene.org/service_DOSBox.php. Bring that up and just start reminiscing like it's the old days.
Yeah, I think they have worked on their protected mode support. Because if you'll notice, a lot of old DOS games now, that like Doom, that use a program like DOS 4GW or something like that to gain protected mode memory, used to give DOSBox all kinds of problems. I think that was one of the main features that they had been working on for this new version. So if you have any old school games sitting around in your closet, you might as well try them out too.
Well, that's all I have for scene-related stuff. Voting day is coming up, Tuesday, November 2nd. Have you registered to vote? Are you going to be voting this year?
I have. There is Proposition 2 going on locally where I live to decriminalize marijuana and make it a civil offense. And it's estimated to save taxpayers in Missouri a few million dollars, so I'm all down for that.
Is that going to be for medical marijuana, or is that
all-encompassing? Well, that's another proposition that's tied in with it, but they're not on the same ballot like they were last year. Voters were really tempted to just cancel it out because, yes, they want, you know, medicine to be available to sick people, but with the decriminalization of it included, they kind of saw it as like some tree-hugging hippie movement or something. So I think this is a bit more of a professional way for them to go about it.
Right on. Yeah, I believe the state of Alaska has an all-out legalization of marijuana on the ballots.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, their rules are pretty lax as it is, but they're looking to just cancel it out.
Yeah, here we have medical marijuana law on the books, and I'm glad that we have that.
Yeah, I think you and Oregon had it for a while in certain areas, but they wound up canceling it.
Yeah, I know a few caregivers. what else? This is not necessarily new news by any stretch of the imagination, but it's still very interesting and likely new to many of our listeners, so I thought I'd bring it up. There's a prominent Lego artist by the name of Eric Harshbarger who has been constructing some very intricate models and artwork from Lego blocks, and he's actively doing this all the time. He's created a 2D mosaic of a Mona Lisa just using the six basic Lego colors, black, blue, green, red, white, and yellow. He's also constructed a 7-foot-tall sculpture of a grandfather clock, which is also fully functional. Have you checked out his site? I don't know how good your laptop's running.
Oh, no, I'd actually seen some of his work quite a while ago, at least the Mona Lisa, and that was really impressive. He only used 6 colors to pull the whole thing off.
Yeah, it looks great. I forget the number of pieces, but I don't want to, you know, overstate anything, but I believe he used something to the tune of 30,000 Lego pieces to create.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. You can draw a lot of similarities between these Lego mosaics, these two-dimensional Lego mosaics that he creates in AntiArt. I mean,
absolutely.
He has a slightly more confined or constricted color palette, but other than that, it's pretty much the same thing. It's just more or less a real-world version of Anti. The reason I bring him up, though, is that he took it one step further. He obtained a metric ton of what are called Modulex bricks, and they're basically square-shaped Lego blocks, and each of them have a different letter of the alphabet imprinted on them. So rather than create something that looks like ANSI art, he, with all these different years of experience creating this Lego art and what have you, he took a stab at creating something which he self-titles as pseudo-retro-techno, and he assembled a physical ASCII art mosaic of Calista Flockhart.
Oh, it looks awesome. I just don't know why he didn't pick a prettier woman. But, yeah, that's my own personal preference.
Yeah.
He did an amazing job, though. I mean, it's just disgusting how well this is put together.
I would love to have a Modulex ASCII art Lego piece on my wall. That's pretty badass. You can check this out for yourself. He has a huge gallery of different physical sculptures and 2D Lego mosaics that he's created. His website is www.ericharshbarger.org/Lego/Calista.html if you want to check out the Calista Flockhart, or just take off the Calista and you should be able to check out his entire gallery. We've touched on what Intense, or Sonic, as we both know him better. We touched on what he's doing for Halloween. Do you have any special plans?
Well, I actually went out and did all of my partying last night. I'm 6'8", so I get constantly asked to be Frankenstein, and I finally caved in for my girlfriend this year. And she dressed me up and put bolts on my neck and face paint and the whole deal.
You're 6'8"?
Yeah. I just have very bad posture.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that you were that tall at pilgrimage.
Well, you're pretty tall yourself. It's not as easy for you to recognize.
Well, I'm about 6'4", but to be quite honest, I don't really... When I see other people who are average height, they don't seem short to me. They seem just average height because that's what I see all the time.
Yeah.
Whenever I see somebody that's like 6'5", or just like barely taller than me, they strike me as humongously tall. But that's odd. I didn't realize that you're 6'8".
Yeah, I'm pretty skinny. It may have thrown you off.
So Frankenstein.
Yeah, it was all right. I was still wearing shorts, like with my wallet chain and my sneakers, and I had a Misfit shirt on, so it wasn't the perfect Frankenstein, but I was at least me as Frankenstein's monster, I suppose.
Somebody topicked a really old Frankenstein VGA that Cat Bones drew a few years ago on IRC today. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I've been at work all day. I haven't had a chance, but anything by Cat Bones I'd love to check out.
Let's see if I can tiny URL this, because it's kind of long. Okay, yeah. I'm tiny URLing the address right now if anybody wants to check it out. It's tinyurl.com/4SS77, and that'll bring up the Cat Bones Frankenstein VGA if you want that to grace your desktop.
So, Rad Man, what are you doing for Halloween?
Not too much, dude. I'm going to be taking out the kids for trick-or-treating and stuff and handing out candy.
Life as a father.
Yeah, my son is the Grim Reaper this year.
Always a classic.
Yes, he's a very convincing Grim Reaper. And my girlfriend's daughter is a black cat, which is also very traditional.
Sounds like some good wholesome costumes.
Yes, yes. Nothing more wholesome than a Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
So just as we're about to wrap up the show here, Adrenaline sends me an 11th-hour message, and he'd like to share a few words about pilgrimage. He was one of the organizers of the pilgrimage scavenger hunt. He definitely has a unique viewpoint coming from the perspective of an organizer. And so let's go ahead and add him in.
Alrighty.
Thank you for calling Sparky's Pizza Delivery at Tooele, Utah. Would you like to hear some of our spooky specials for today?
Yeah, absolutely, man. What do you got going on?
Well, we've got the creepy, haunting pepperoni and the Red Man's a Jackass-style pizza. It's everyone's favorite.
Nice. I'm going to go ahead and add you into the radio show right now. You ready?
Sure.
All right, cool. Okay, we're now speaking with Adrenaline. Adrenaline, we were just speaking for just a brief moment about how you were one of the organizers of the 2600 SLC scavenger hunt at Pilgrimage. I was just wondering, what were some of the more unique scavenger hunt items or tasks that people had accomplished?
I don't know. We've always got a lot of crazy stuff each year. One of them was to build, you know, the highest structure you can out of some Lincoln logs, which, you know, seems pretty tame compared to some of the hunts we've done at previous year's DEF CONs. But, I mean, we had one that, you know, was pretty tall.
I'm reviewing the list right now, and one of the tasks about midway through it is loudly sing Ricola. Did anybody do that?
One actually did. First nights of pilgrimage after the game show and whatnot. Everybody's winding down and hopefully starting to sober up at the time after the Salmiakki and whatnot.
Nope.
And about 12:15, 12:30 or so, we're all standing around outside the room where the game show is held. And next thing I know, I hear someone yelling, Ricola! Got a good laugh out of it.
Utah is renowned for being a somewhat Mormon-oriented...
Incredibly Mormon.
Yeah, state, right? And so that kind of heightened the challenge that some of these tasks and items already had, such as the double-headed dildo. They had personal beliefs that they kind of had to circumvent or overcome in order to accomplish some of these tasks. Were there any creative methods that some of the participants had to use in order to accomplish some of these?
We did have one of the teams that was, how do I put it, really heavily Mormon. Our, you know, items are always really risque, and we knew we were doing a scavenger hunt in Utah this year, so we had to tone it down a little bit, but managed to throw some stuff in there for good measure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think a double-headed dildo is pretty good measure.
You know, stuff like finding the word bicurious printed somewhere in a magazine, newspaper ad, stuff like that. And, you know, stuff like that, I think some of the Mormon team went out and did, not exactly getting a grasp of what it was they were finding and why it was funny. They did it. It was good times.
I just keep going back to the days at the Hotel Grand America.
Every Sunday they have a state-renowned brunch. It's been the most famous brunch for, like, 4 years straight. And it's everything, whether you want sushi or someone to make you a nice omelet, waffles, pancakes, French toast, you know, duck, lamb, whatever. It's a huge buffet of goodies for breakfast and lunch, and yeah, it was some awesome food.
You know, I hate buffets. I absolutely refuse to go to buffets, but this was like 6-star buffet out of 5.
This was no ordinary buffet. They take care of people.
This wasn't your king's table or
shitty walk. Take your order, please.
I mean, this place was incredible, man. My God, I just keep, you know, thinking back at the, I mean, they had cantaloupe juice, fresh squeezed cantaloupe juice.
Awesome.
I've never heard of that.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But, I mean, you had to try it just because you've never seen it.
Suffocated kumquat.
Yeah, you know, stuff like the cantaloupe juice, you know, the cantaloupe being the white man's watermelon. Awesome stuff. I remember seeing it there. I'm like, there's this cantaloupe juice. People squeeze, you know, cantaloupes, get juice out of them. I give it a try, and it was awesome.
Yeah, Jason was referring to the desserts as the biosphere dessert.
There was, oh man, they had the angel berries.
The god berries and the angel berries. I mean, dude, this place was just unreal. You know, none of us were sure how they're staying in business because this is the best buffet I've ever had. And that's almost reason alone to make me want to go back to Utah.
It was pretty awesome. And, you know, come to find out a few weeks later, my dad actually knows the owner of the hotel.
Nice.
Turns out the guy is actually, you know, losing business on it, but he's one of those guys who owns so many things that, you know, he can afford to keep
it open. He's gaining the profit elsewhere.
Yeah.
Man.
So, man, and I hate to interject, but this has been bothering me. I don't know that you can squeeze juice from a melon. I don't think it's possible.
Well,
there's got to be some other method.
You were breastfed, right? And, you know, juice came from that melon, so.
He has a good point, dude.
I don't know. It's a little blurry that far back.
Oh, for me, it was just like yesterday.
I was reading in the party report by Polaris. He made mention of the Trust Jesus spray paintings that grace the sidewalk every few, like, quarter miles that you go. You know, I was kind of concerned, and I think a lot of other people were concerned that, you know, we're outside of this region, you know, that you're going to enter in Salt Lake City and be suffocated by all of this, like, religious propaganda, but that wasn't the case at all. In fact, I didn't really feel it at all, other than, you know, seeing the painting on the sidewalks. There wasn't really anything there that made me feel like, you know, I need to act a certain way or I need to change who I am in order to have fun at this party. I mean, it was a good time.
Other than the 32-story tall Church of Mormon. I don't know, man. Yeah, you're right, though. I saw more Christ Saves billboards on the way through Kansas than I did in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I mean, you live in the Bible Belt.
Yeah, right smack in the middle of it, man.
So,
but yeah, it was pretty chill.
It's gotten, you know, a lot better than it used to be. I mean, even the liquor laws and whatnot used to be a lot tougher, but, you know, people come here more often now because they're not as lax. I mean, you used to not be able to, you'd walk into a restaurant and you'd look on the menu and there would be no advertisements for alcohol anywhere. It was by request only. A lot of it's loosened up, I think, because of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Since the Olympics that were held here a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so you can walk into, you know, I took a nice girl out to Olive Garden the other night, and, you know, we were looking at the menu, and, you know, got nice drinks on there that you would have never known they served before unless you asked.
Interesting. Yeah, Severina echoed those same comments that ever since the Winter Olympics were held in Salt Lake City, things have really changed a lot, and people have kind of relaxed a little bit, and it's just maybe attracted maybe a more diverse crowd, at least in Salt Lake City proper.
Yeah.
It's a good environment for all six of your wives.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, hey, look, guys, my girlfriend is cooking up some mad pumpkin seeds in the oven right now, and I'm getting pretty hungry. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to bring up on the show?
No, not really, except that Remorse's 10-year birthday pack will be coming out in December and that everybody should check that out.
Cool. We'll look forward to that release probably coming out next March then.
Yeah, something like that.
Right on. Adrenaline, thanks for joining us at the 11th hour of the Art State episode here. Halifax, thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, no problem, man. I had a good time.
Yeah, same here.
Thanks to Intense, a.k.a. Sonic, and Scour as well as all of our guests. That's it, man. That's a wrap. Taking us out of this show is the track Bitch Ass Bustas by Mochum.
The year is 1989. Everybody was spring break. Now it's 04, and the party is pilgrimage. Back in 1989, everybody is down. Even though no one seems to want to come to this town. Girls don't like me. Still in light. This fucking time.
But dude, what about Nate? We had Tran and Renaissance too.
The arts.